Welcome to the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Larry today. He'll be back tomorrow. And on the show, we set aside the second Monday of every month to talk about the latest in technology, and we bring a tech expert in to answer all of your tech questions, whether it's your operating system, your cell phone, whether it's shopping online or getting a new high-tech gear for Christmas and what you need to do to get it out of the box. Well, all those questions are available for you today, and we want to know what you need to know to get through the holidays. What are your high-tech questions for our guest? Beth D'Angelo joins us again. She has worked in IT for more than 20 years now, and she's a senior IT specialist at UW-Madison's Division of Information Technology. And if you've got a question about technology, whether it's shopping online or a new high-tech device, give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. Perhaps it's about an old operating system or a new cell phone. You can also email us, talk@wpr.org. And Beth, welcome back to the Larry Mueller Show.
Good morning, Lee. Thanks for having me.
So I want to start with a little online shopping story that I was doing after Thanksgiving. I was at the Amazon website browsing for family for Christmas, trying to get some ideas. And I put... tarot cards with cute cats. I put that in my cart. And so I had tarot cards with cute cats in my cart. I thought it would be great for my niece until my sister told me that's a terrible idea for a child. And she's right, of course. And then I started getting emails from the company that had was offering tarot cards with cute cats. And I could not figure out how this company got my email address when all I did was put one of their products in my shopping cart on the Amazon website. Can you figure out how that happened?
Yeah, absolutely. So that is done by a little technique called a cookie, which is a very cute sounding name for something that maybe is not quite as cute as we think. Because what cookies are doing is really collecting information from a session that your computer is having with a website or a service and storing that information for use in the future.
Where is it storing this information?
Well, generally there's cookies that are local on your operating system that are stored locally that can be accessed through the permissions that site obtains, and then there are also cookies that are stored remotely within the infrastructure of whatever's hosting that website. But it's a communication tool that these sites and services use for, initially trying to personalize the experience of browsing and to, enable some automation. So auto filling in certain text lines, knowing your email address when you return to a site, things like that. But then it can also collect that information and also sell that information to other companies to use to target you with advertising or to track your interests on the internet.
So what's the purpose of cookies from my perspective as a computer user, as a holiday shopper online? Is there value to have cookies, or is this something I should consider getting rid of?
Yeah, I think, there are various cookies serve different purposes, and I think disabling all cookies is going to make the experience with certain browsers, like if you're using the standard browsers like a Safari or a Chrome, it's going to make the experience a bit more clunky. You're going to have to fill in everything on, say, a form on a website that you would normally go in and start typing information in, and it would remember what you had typed in previously, and it'll auto-fill that info for you. You can like auto fill out your address in certain sites that you shop in frequently. If you do put something in a shopping cart and you accidentally close the browser, if you go back in and you go back to that shopping cart, that item will still be there. If you disable cookies, things that like that won't happen in an automated fashion. You'll have to manually enter all of that info. So it's really a convenience on the user side, but it's a lot more advantageous on the service or the website side for cookies to be enabled.
Yeah, this tarot cards with cute little cats seemed intrusive after a while. I mean, it was innocuous at the Amazon website, but in my email inbox, I felt like if I were in a brick and mortar store and I'd walked out without buying anything, it felt like the clerk was chasing me down the street.
Seriously, we have a running joke amongst friends that you got to be careful what you Google. You don't want to mess up your algorithm.
That's funny because it's true, isn't it?
It's really true, and you never know what's going to start showing up. And it's not even that you're just Googling something or searching for something, and then it's capturing that. But then we also have apps on our devices, on our phones, that have access to the microphone on your phone.
Sure.
And sometimes can pick up fragments of conversation and develop something like a cookie out of that, or a data point that's used then for targeting advertising to you in the future.
So you are telling me that at times, if I give it permission, my microphone and my phone may be listening to me.
It can be, especially if you have that app actively running at the time, or if that app is refreshing in the background. So it's important to, you know, be discerning about which apps on your devices you're enabling to have access to those parts of your device, like your phone and your camera. If you're concerned about your privacy, it's certainly something to be judicious about.
Beth D'Angelo, our guest, senior IT specialist at UW-Madison's Division of Information Technology. And we do have a smartphone question here from Kent in Reedstown. Kent, good morning.
Oh, my mayor. Oh, hi. I have an older Android phone, and I get this annoying notification sound, and it's not my media. And it's not my call setting, and it's on my ring and notification volume, and it's not on my alarm volume. But I can't find it, and I'd like to just shut it off.
So you're getting an alarm? When are you getting this alarm? When does it go off? Why does it go off?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm not quite sure. and it's not exactly the alarm sound. I mean, I've heard all these sounds that I mentioned on the phone, and it's not any of those. So it's somewhere in the phone that makes the sound that I just don't want to hear.
At random times for no reason?
Well, I've tried tracing why, but I just at a loss.
Beth, do you have any questions for Kent?
No, it sounds like that would, it would drive me crazy. So I can understand your frustration with it. Some things that you can check, with an older Android, it may be something within the notification history that a certain app has like a notification turned on that you don't know about. So I know within the settings of the older Android operating system, if you go into the notification settings and then into notification history, it may tell you what that notification is coming from or what app that notification is sending from, even though it's not giving you a visual pop-up when that alarm goes off. It'll be logged in that notification history. So that's something you could check to find out. Also, if like you still can't figure out where it's coming from, I would try maybe shutting off all your notifications. So, with the main switch and then turning them each on one at a time, and see if it keeps happening, which one you turned on last, which may have caused that to start happening again, just kind of ruling out which it could be.
Sure. And as Kent mentioned, this phone is a little bit older in age. And I do wonder about at what point does our technology become too old to actually be useful? But I'm trying to hold on to these things for as long as possible. They're not cheap.
I agree. Yeah, I think people are, especially now with the cost of these goods going up, it's more often folks are trying to hang on to their devices a little longer. And I would say as long as the device is still eligible for security updates and updates to the operating system, that if it still works for you, there's no reason to replace it. But once something reaches that end of life where you're no longer getting those security updates, that's when you really want to start thinking about replacing it just for security purposes.
Well, your suggestion, I think, is a lot better than where my head went, Beth, because I was thinking just maybe reinstall or, do a fresh install on your old cell phone.
smash the phone.
I didn't go that
far. Depending on what time that alarm goes off.
But check those notifications. Check the notification log. Shut them all down, and then start them up one at a time and see if we can't get rid of that annoying sound, Kent. I hope that helps, and thank you for the call. We've got another phone question here along with email from Bill in Barnes. Bill, good morning.
Good morning. These are semi-related,
okay,
if I can get both questions out there. I use Google Mail, Gmail, and it appears that I'm accumulating vast quantities of unread and mail that I, instead of understanding that it needed to be delete, I hit archive.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how many thousands are there. I can't seem to find a way to get in any sort of mass bunch or even individually, but there's thousands there, you know, that I could delete all the mail from, New York Times and all the stuff from,
sure,
you know, there's categories that I can, if I could search on their domain name, I could just delete them all, but I can't find out how to get into the cloud to do it. And if maybe this is related, maybe not, but my iPhone won't update. It says there's no room to install the iOS, and I can see big files out there that I don't think I need, but I don't know how to. One of them says Warwick Castle. Is it the video that I took 20 years ago that I'd like to save, or is it a piece of adware that somebody plopped into my phone? I don't know.
Warwick Castle, that's great questions, and let's start with cleaning up Gmail for Bill. Beth?
Yeah, absolutely. So I can relate to this. My Gmail account I've had for many, many years, mm-hmm, and it's accumulated a lot of mail over the years. But one good way to, let's say, you mentioned an example of how would you delete all the mail from one specific sender that you don't care about, and it's maybe thousands and thousands of messages. In the search bar in Gmail, if you type in the word from and then a colon, and then the address or the domain, so the at Amazon.com, and you want to delete anything from Amazon.com. If you type in the from colon at Amazon.com, it will show you a filtered list of every email in your mailbox from that sender, from that domain. You can then do a select all,
mm-hmm,
and delete.
Mm-hmm.
And don't send them to the archive, just delete them and send them to trash. That way they will permanently delete from. Now, it takes 30 days for things to automatically permanently delete from your trash folder if you don't do the empty trash now when you click on it. So you can do that either way. Wait the 30 days or click empty trash now. And those should actually clear out of the storage for your Gmail account once you do that.
So with Bill's iPhone now, he needs to update, but the phone says there is not enough space on the phone to do so. And he's wondering about some of these large files he has. Some he may like to keep and some he has no need for and didn't even know they were there.
Yeah, that's a good question for trying to clear out space, especially if you're trying to make some of your older devices last a little bit longer and you want to be able to update, mm-hmm, them, but you need some space on the actual storage of that device to do it. You can actually go in and look individually at what apps are taking up what storage space on your iPhone. If you go into the settings, I believe it's under the general settings. There's a storage. Let me just click through here and make sure that I'm telling you the correct way to go. General and iPhone storage. So it's if you go into settings and then general and then iPhone storage, going through that menu, you can take a look at all of your apps. It'll tell you how much space each of those apps is using locally. If you go into each of those, it'll then tell you what files within those apps are taking up space. You can choose to delete all the files for a specific app. You can individually choose files to delete. A really good place to look is in your messages, because if people have sent you photos,
yes,
and videos, they may be stored in your messages and in your camera roll. So you can delete them from the messages if you've already saved them to your camera roll. You don't need to store them in two places. So that's a good way to get rid of some unneeded storage without actually losing access to those on your device.
Great questions, Bill, and I hope that helps. Thank you so much for calling. Beth D'Angelo, our guest, IT specialist with the UW-Madison Division of Information Technology, answering your questions not about Christmas cookies, but computer cookies today, holiday online shopping, and new tech you may get under the tree this year and how to make it all work. You can give us a call with your tech questions at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You're welcome to email us anytime, talk@WPR.org. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Larry today, and you're listening to WPR News. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Larry Mueller today on The Larry Mueller Show, and coming up at noon, we will take a look at what it takes to make a career change, how you can better balance work and life, and take care of childcare and more with our guest from the Department of Workforce Development. But right now, we're talking about technology and what you may need to know before you go shopping online this holiday season, or what you may need to know before you end up trying to connect to a new smart device that may be under the tree for you this season. Give us a call, 1-800-642-1234, or email us, talk@WPR.org. And Beth, we have an email here from RJ, who's been using Bitwarden, which is a password manager, which is something we've talked about in the past. And he's been using it for years, but about 6 months ago, he got a S25 Plus phone. And now his password manager will not autofill. Are you aware of this problem or any steps he can take to correct it?
Bitwarden is a password manager I haven't worked with previously. I've worked with LastPass and I guess a couple of Norton, a couple of other different services. But if it works like other very similar apps, first thing I would look at are the settings. So I would go into whatever settings management tool you have for Bitwarden and take a look at whatever password and autofill settings they may have. If those are switched on or off in a way that would affect how that works when you use the service. Sometimes when maybe an app updates to a new version, an old setting that was on may have gotten switched off in the new version by default, and you may have to go in and reset those things up. So I would give that a try first. Otherwise, I would make sure also that in the accessibility settings that the app Bitwarden has the necessary permissions to your device to be able to autofill. So I would take a look at those permissions too.
The thing that stuck out to me and is that Bitwarden, RJ has been using for years, but this is a new, S25 Plus Android phone. Is it possible that old software might not be adaptable to new hardware?
It may be that using an older service, on a newer piece of hardware isn't as fully featured sometimes. There are cases where you'll have issues with compatibility. I think if the software installs and there's no warnings about some specific known issue, you should really expect it to behave similar to how it would on a newer phone.
Thank you for that, and good luck, RJ. We'll go to Peter in Appleton next. Peter, good morning.
Good morning. I just bought a new computer with Windows 11 on it, and, of course, everything looks different. So I asked the salesperson, well, how do I figure out what this thing does? And he said, oh, well, just go to YouTube and watch some videos. Is there a better source of just trying to understand what's all available on this machine and how do I make it work?
Yeah, I think that's a great question because, you know what you want to use the machine for, but you don't necessarily know all the things that this new PC can do. Where can Peter turn, Beth?
Yeah, I think, obviously watching a video that kind of shows you like where the familiar things that you're used to from Windows 10 are in Windows 11 could be helpful. But also kind of as, when Windows looked a specific way and things were oriented in a very specific fashion for several versions, it's really hard to make a transition to something that looks so new and you're not sure where those, tools that you're used to being able to find quickly are. one of the nice things about Windows 11, though, is that the search bar can kind of just tell you whatever you need, and you don't need to really know like what terms to use. You can click in the search bar and start typing in what you want to do. So, you know, if you want to launch Microsoft Word and you don't want to try to find where the start menu is now to go find the folder that used to have Microsoft Word in it, in the search bar, you just start typing in the word Word and it'll pop up the best match for that on the menu. So in some ways it's easier because you don't need to go through all the clicks that you used to in older versions of Windows to get to what you're looking for, because now it's kind of prompt based.
Right.
But it is a very different user interface. It's different visually, and things are not in the same place they used to be. So it does take some time to transition.
Peter, when I got my first Windows 11 computer, which was not so long ago, I was a little bit, I was confused as well and really didn't know where everything was. So I looked up how to make my Windows 11 look like Windows 10 and changed some of the features in Windows 11 so it looked a little bit like the old operating software, which I had a much easier time getting around in. So that might be an option as well. And thank you so much for the call. Beth, last Thursday, we had our consumer protection experts on talking about holiday shopping and, you know, try to stay perhaps skeptical without getting too cynical about it. But it sounds sometimes downright scary about going online and sometimes like rolling the dice when it comes to shopping online. What do you do to stay safe when you're shopping on the for the holidays on a website?
Yeah, there's a few things you can do right off the bat to protect you regardless of where you're shopping online. And one of those is for any of your banking apps that you're using on your phone is to make sure you're enabling the multi-factor authentication on those apps, just to secure, you know, those financial specific applications that you have on your devices. That's just a good baseline to start from. I would always ensure you're using secure passwords for any of the e-commerce sites that you're logging into. And really, I know this is hard for folks to take on, but not reusing passwords is a really important step. And in the interest of not filling our heads full of passwords that we have to remember and then forget, installing something like a password manager. We just talked about one, and there are many password managers out there to choose from, but installing a password manager app that securely stores all of those passwords, that you only need one master password, and then it expires and recreates passwords for you on a regular schedule to kind of change things up, that's really a kind of necessary in this day and age.
Yeah, and multi-factor authentication is a way to protect yourself beyond any sort of phishing scams that would protect you against anybody who might have your password somehow. I don't know, how secure is multi-factor authentication these days? Have folks found ways around it, and are we looking at triple-factor authentication, or are we pretty sound right now?
I mean, it's really the standard for login authentication at this point. We aren't looking at like a layer beyond that as far as, it's getting to the application level now where it's not only the network that you need to, like, let's say at work, we're all used to using multi-factor authentication at work. Now at the consumer level on, certain social media platforms, certain online banking platforms are requiring multi-factor authentication. So we're getting to deeper layers of the application that you're logging into that are now multi-factor enabled. So I guess the closer to the actual online activity where that authentication happens, the better the security is getting.
Would you be comfortable shopping on a Facebook marketplace? And what do you do in order to feel more comfortable with that? We've heard calls from the consumer protection experts about Facebook marketplace not coming through when, you know, folks had spent the money to buy the product and still have questions about where it may be. And for that matter, other social media sites. What should you consider when shopping on these social sites?
Yeah, well, I personally have bought many things on Facebook Marketplace. I've also sold a few things on there. Huh. I've had pretty good experiences. I've used it pretty extensively, but I have some, rules of thumb that I go by, especially when I'm purchasing something through Facebook Marketplace. So I don't use it like I would in eBay, where I'm going to send someone money and then they're going to send me a product. I use it in the sense that we are going to meet up in a public daylight location to exchange money for a product. So I need to see what I'm purchasing before I agree to actually buy it from that person. So it's more of a kind of what Craigslist used to offer. When looking at what is advertised on Facebook Marketplace, there are a few tells to figure out whether or not the ad is legitimate or a scam. First things first, if it looks too good to be true, it is. If the price is too low, there's a reason. It's a scam. If you are unsure if it is a scam or not, clicking on the profile of the seller and then taking a look at whether or not that same item is for sale in multiple marketplaces, because it's showing you your local marketplace. But if this person has this advertised as a local good in 50 different cities, likely that's a scam.
Yeah.
You can also see what they have sold previously when you look at their profile. If they have several successful sales and good reviews from people who have purchased from them, similar to purchasing something on eBay, you can kind of trust that this is a respectable seller, somebody that you're likely going to get what you pay for and not have a problem with. But another thing is I don't ever go to one of these exchanges alone. I always make sure that I have someone with me and that someone else knows exactly where and when I am meeting up with this person to do this exchange.
Do you trust those reviews? I worry about fake reviews or AI stuff, fluffing these reviews in ways that aren't legitimate.
Yeah, what I more so look at is, have they sold things like this before?
Okay.
So I look through those, it'll show you past historic items that seller has sold successfully. So I'll go back through those and look at the listings and just kind of trace back to see if this is a legitimate person that I even want to reach out to with a message to say, I'd like to actually take a look at this item in person. Are you available to do that? But I just purchased a car for my almost 16-year-old child through Facebook Marketplace about three, four months ago.
Awesome.
Worked out great.
Yeah. Beth D'Angelo, our guest, senior IT specialist at UW-Madison's Division of Information Technology, answering all your tech questions over these holidays, whether it's old operating systems or new technology. How can Beth help you today? Give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email us, talk@WPR.org. And Beth, these websites really want to keep my credit card number. They always ask, should we just keep this? It'll be a lot easier for you next time. And I'm always very reluctant to think that I have trust issues.
Yeah, rightfully so.
Okay.
I think we all should have trust issues.
Okay.
Really the only website I want storing my credit card information is my credit card company and my bank. So I don't store my credit card information with an online seller. I keep my credit card. If I want to be able to autofill it, I use my password manager to do that.
Oh.
So you can store it securely on your device, or you can use something like Apple Pay, where you set up your credit card as your Apple Pay account. And then when you're online and shopping, you can pay using Apple Pay, and it does the autofill for you securely through your device.
Google does the same thing,
right? Storing that information. Yeah, you can do that with an Android device through Google.
Yeah.
So Google Pay, Apple Pay. You can also use Venmo in a similar way if you don't want to use one that's specific to your phone. And some banks even have their own tool that allow you to do that, where it'll store it locally in an app, and then it'll fill it in for an e-commerce site for you. But I wouldn't use the websites you're shopping on to store your credit card info.
Makes me feel better. And we talked earlier about cookies, not the Christmas kind, but the computer kind that stores information about your web traffic and travels. Credit cards would not be showing up on our cookies, would they?
No. So anytime you are passing credit card information to a seller, it's going through a secure data transfer. So that's when you see an, so normally any regular old website is an HTTP, but when you see an HTTPS or you see the little lock icon in your browser, that means you are using a secure encrypted transfer for your data, and it is not allowing cookies to store any of that session.
What about when I'm traveling and I need to use a Wi-Fi, and I'm on a coffee shop Wi-Fi or an airport Wi-Fi? How safe should I feel shopping online through those internet connections, and what can I do to protect myself there?
So if you do nothing to protect yourself, you should feel very unsafe doing that with your financial information. If you are taking a couple of pretty simple steps to protect your device, I think you can feel fairly confident that you're going to be safe with your financial data. The first one would be ensuring that you have some sort of antivirus and anti-malware protection on the device that you're using. So if there is some sort of infectious virus that could be transmitted to your device through a public Wi-Fi network, and you don't have some antivirus program on your device, you could easily be compromised that way. That is a very common attack vector for viruses that then will scrape your financial data and, you know, potentially sell it to somebody who wants to steal your identity. The other thing I would do is to use a VPN.
VPN stands for what, Beth?
Yes.
Virtual?
It is called a, virtual private network.
Okay.
So a VPN is essentially a tunnel within the internet traffic that is secured by a layer of encryption that is a lot stronger than what general internet traffic is sent via. So it makes it much more difficult to penetrate that information that's traveling over what could be an open network that someone could attack through.
And are there virtual private networks or VPNs that would be available for free that would protect me?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, there are tons of them out there.
Okay.
If you don't mind getting ads with your VPN, sometimes, you know, you have to put up with a few ads displaying on your screen in order to get the free VPNs. But there's plenty of them out there. If you do a search in the App Store or the Google Play Store, whichever device you have for VPN, it'll give you a whole list of them. One that I actually really use pretty heavily for a free version would be Opera.
Opera.
Highly recommended. It's free and unlimited. I'm a big fan of it. There are paid VPNs out there. NordVPN is a very popular one. ProtonVPN is a pretty common.
And Beth, again, the value in these virtual private networks is it hides your internet traffic. It doesn't, others can't see where you're going, whether it be your internet service provider or whoever's running the coffee shop wireless that you're connected to, or the airport for that matter. What they see is that you are in a tunnel. They don't see what you're entering into these websites, and they don't see the web traffic that you are traveling through.
Exactly. So it's not just that, like, obscuring who you are and where you're going, but it's also encapsulating the data that is transmitting between your device and whatever you are, you know, accessing on the internet. It is tunneling that data that's transmitting so that it cannot be compromised if that network has been compromised.
Just sounds like sound internet hygiene for keeping clean and staying safe online, especially over the holiday season. Our guest, Beth D'Angelo, who is an IT specialist at UW-Madison's Division of Information Technology, answering your tech questions today at 1-800-642-1234. You can also send us an email to talk@WPR.org. Steve, we'll get to you next, along with Allison, who is in the queue, and maybe you as well. I'm Lee Rayburn, and for Larry Mueller today, and you're listening to The Larry Mueller Show. I'm Lee Rayburn, in for Larry today on The Larry Mueller Show, and Larry returns tomorrow with Mike Bino, the editor of Our Wisconsin Magazine, with a December-January issue and stories about the holidays, some of the most heartwarming stories from around our state. Don't miss Larry Mueller tomorrow with Our Wisconsin Magazine's Mike Bino here on WPR News from 11 to 1. But right now, we're talking about technology and answering your questions with Beth D'Angelo from the UW-Madison Division of Information Technology. And let's go to Steve in Ironwood, Michigan next. Steve, good morning.
Good morning.
What do you have for us?
My problem is going to sound kind of weird. On my desktop computer, since Trump got in, and that's when it started, I get from 25 to 75 spam emails a week. It used to be more. I unsubscribe, I block them. I still get them.
What kind of email system are you using? What's your email? Are you Gmail or?
What no, on my desktop. I think it's Charter.
Okay, so you're using a Charter email and getting just spammed in a way that makes email almost not even worth opening, Beth. What can Steve do?
Yeah, so Charter should have some spam filtering settings that you can go into your email program on your desktop computer and kind of tweak to help include some of this overload that you're getting. And I would say if, you know, you're still having trouble with it, this is something that you can call Charter about.
Okay.
So, and I think it would be a good thing to bring up with them because if they're all coming from, you know, various domains or different addresses, so, you know, just putting a block this sender doesn't cut it, they may need to look into blacklisting certain email systems that are sending these messages. And at their end, we'll be able to run a report to see where they're coming from. And they may be able to put a block in place on their end so that they never even get to your inbox.
What about
something that's really causing an issue?
Steve, yeah. Trying to unsubscribe or cancel these emails. I often wonder whether or not if these emails showed up for no reason in the first place, whether or not they'd be good online partners and agree to disconnect when I ask them to. Am I feeling, should Steve be trying to unsubscribe?
You know, honestly, the unsubscribe likely isn't going to do much in that case. It's probably not even something you're officially subscribed to or that you ever agreed to receive. It's somebody purchased your email address on some long list of email addresses to target with ads or emails. And, you know, likely they're coming from a few sources and not a large group of different sources. They're coming from a few source systems, but with multiple different domains and addresses. So it's really hard to target them at the user level. But Charter should be able to do something about that and in figuring out what system they're coming from and then putting a filter in place to not allow messages from that system to get through to them.
From spam emails to spam calls, I understand that at least Apple is taking some action with their latest operating system to make a better user experience, Beth.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, spam calls have gotten a lot more frequent, I'd say, in the last few years. And, you know, there are ways to block them at the actual, like, phone number level where the same caller can't get through to you. But now they've actually started building into some of the new versions of the like Apple iOS the ability to basically filter out calls from numbers that you don't know. So if it's a caller that you don't have stored in your phone book as someone that's a known caller, it will basically shut off the ringer. It will not make your buzzer go off. It'll send that call to a tool that will can do a couple of different things. It can actually prompt the person who's calling to say why they're calling, and then it can send you a little text to say, hey, this person is calling for this reason. Do you want to answer it, or do you want to just send them to voicemail? So you don't actually have to interact with the person in order to figure out if it's a call you need to take.
And for Steve's email, there should be a button in there that could identify emails as spam. And would that help in some way?
Yeah. And it depends on which email client, so which program you're using and who your email provider is. But generally, with most email providers, you can like right-click on the message and say, mark this as spam. And if you mark it as spam, it actually like sends a message to the spam filter for that email service saying, hey, we probably shouldn't let messages from this sender come through anymore. And if they get enough of those mark this as spam messages, it'll then filter those out automatically.
Let's go to Allison and Racine next. Allison, thanks for waiting. Good morning.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I had a comment and a question. My comment was for one of the previous callers, who was having trouble with Windows 11.
Mm-hmm.
And I know our local library has lots of classes about a lot of different tech issues. And so he could check out his local library, and if they don't have a specific class, he could even maybe just go to the library, and they might have someone on staff who can walk him through how to use Windows 11. And then I have a kind of wonky question about something with my iPhone. I had been seeing videos online about how, I think it's Google AI, is monitoring and can see lots of personal data and information, and I don't remember exactly what the warning was in these videos, but it was kind of alarming to me. So I changed something in my iPhone settings, and what I noticed after I did that, and I don't remember exactly what it was, and I'm hoping maybe Beth can tell me, but now when I look up a business, just like on a Google search, it used to come up like, if I would say Walgreens near me, all the Walgreens near me would come up and a map, and you could click on the business and their hours of operation would come up and Google reviews and all kinds of things, their address, phone number. Now when I do a search, those things don't come up anymore. So I feel like I did something in the settings to change that, and I don't know what I did. I want to go back.
But this is this balance between, you know, what kind of information you make available through your phone and your privacy and how you want to use your phone to make, you know, navigating through this complicated world a little bit easier. And it feels like Allison might have gone a little too far with her iPhone, Beth.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that is, well, first off, I want to thank you for the comment about public library.
Yeah.
I think every other show that I do, there's somebody who mentions the public library as a resource for, you know, learning how to use some of these technology tools, that there aren't a lot of user-friendly ways to do that. And public libraries are such a wealth of that knowledge and skill, and librarians are, you know, such a great resource to look to for that type of, you know, learning. So thank you for mentioning it. I always forget to bring it up when I'm talking about how do I learn how to do this stuff. I'm always like, oh, well, YouTube University, but your public library is just the best place to start, and I highly recommend it.
Few things are as user-friendly as a public library.
Right, and I don't know about you, Lee, but the way I learn best is to, like, watch someone else do it and then do the thing myself.
Yep.
So, you know, to be shown how to do it and then to try it. And if you can go and have someone show you hands-on how to do something, I think it really makes a difference in how you absorb it. So,
now, getting Allison to the closest Walgreens, it sounds like Allison may have turned off her location or not made her location available to Google.
Yes. So the easy solution to this is likely that you change the location services settings on your phone, and you just need to go into the settings of your iPhone, into privacy and security, and turn on the location services. It may be that it's turned off completely for your phone, or that it's turned off for certain apps like Google or Google Maps. So I would go in and check at the app level and at the OS level that you have it turned on. I generally only turn it on for the apps that I want to use it. So I don't turn it on for everything. I go app by app, and I decide which app I want to know my location, whether I want it to always know my location or only while I'm using the app. So I would suggest going through that a little bit with a fine-tooth comb.
I appreciate the call, Allison, and we'll go to Paul in Toma next. Paul, good morning.
Good morning. I have a Galaxy 6 folding phone, and the screen went bad, so I replaced it with a Galaxy 7. And the guy told me, he said, I might want to have the Galaxy 6 fixed and have the screen repaired so I'd have an extra phone. But that got me to wondering, is it really worth having a phone fixed? Is it going to become obsolete too quick? Any idea where I would have it fixed? And what's your opinion on doing that?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a bad idea to have a spare if you're concerned about losing a phone, or, you know, if you need one for a kiddo or something like that. Screen replacement. So if you, let's say with, if you have a Samsung and you pay for the Care Plus that you get with the phone, it'll cost about $30 to replace the screen if it's still under that Care Plus plan. Hmm. If you don't pay for that, it's usually about $100 to replace the screen. And it's about the same with Apple. They're not that expensive to replace, as opposed to, you know, the $700 to $1,000 for a new phone. So, you know, it really depends on whether or not you think you'll ever need a spare. And if that spare sits in a drawer for 2 or 3 years, it becomes a brick anyway.
Where's a good place to look for somebody who can do that sort of service, Beth?
So, well, with the iPhone service, they're, you know, Apple Store is obviously going to be the best place. For a Galaxy, for Samsung, I think you can go through, like, a Best Buy, you know, any of the, like...
Okay.
I know in Madison here, we do have Madison Computer Repair, which I always like to put in a plug for those guys. They're great over on the west side. There's lots of, like, little mom-and-pop phone fix-it shops around that, as long as they're certified to do the fix by the manufacturer, you should be able to get it done without a problem.
So I use my smartphone for multi-factor authentication, and last winter I dropped my smartphone on the ice, and it was no longer functional, which meant I was locked out of a lot of things, including everything I needed to do my job. So having a backup phone sounds like, especially if you use your phone for any sort of multi-factor authentication, sounds like probably worth the investment as long as it's not too much money.
You know, and also having a flip phone that maybe isn't connected to the internet when you just want a phone and you don't want to be distracted by the other stuff, not a bad idea to carry in your pocket.
We'll go to Karen and Holman next. Karen, good morning.
Good morning. So you were talking earlier about online purchases and having, like, your information saved. I think I accidentally did. I don't normally do that, but I think I accidentally did, but I was able to go in and delete it, and it came up with something saying it was forever, and I'm like, yep, okay, I don't know what forever means or from what website.
Right.
But then right about the same time, in my bank account, I got a Visa foreign transaction fee for 49 cents.
49 cents? That doesn't sound like...
If that's something, you know, where they put in a small transaction to try to see if it works. But nothing's come up since then.
Was it a deposit or a withdrawal?
A withdrawal.
Interesting.
So,
and I've seen these before.
49 cents.
I've seen dollars, you know, to see if you have the capacity. They'd charge you a dollar to see if you could do that. But I don't know what this would mean for Karen and whether or not this would be going to Wisconsin's Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection to give them a heads up or contact your bank or credit card. Beth, we got about a minute and a half here.
Yeah, I would contact the bank or the credit card company and find out exactly where that transaction came from. It could have been them testing to see if it was a valid number that they could withdraw from and that a larger withdrawal may come later. So I would contact them and find out exactly where that came from.
Yeah, and it sounds like Karen did the right thing about, you know, her credit card online. We can all make a mistake because that box can be checked automatically and we may just forget about it. And then going back and trying to delete that, those two things may not be connected, but you should not, even if it's 49 cents, you should probably still be wary of any charge you can't account for.
Agree.
Yeah, real quick one here. Lynn in Pewaukee emailed. She's got Norton's VPN, and it says that she's secured because their T-Mobile household internet VPN is on. So Norton doesn't turn on. Is that okay for Lynn?
Yeah, I think if your internet service provider has a built-in VPN on your access point, then you know not having a secondary VPN turned on when you're on that network is fine. But when you're out and about, say you're at the coffee shop, you want to make sure you turn that on so that when you're connected to a free Wi-Fi or a public Wi-Fi, you're still protected.
Hey, Beth, I want to thank you for helping us with a happy and safe online holiday. Very much appreciate, as always, all of your tech information. And we didn't even get to the Bluetooth bird feeder. I'll have to figure that out on my own.
Good luck with it, Lee. Happy holidays to you.
Thank you. Beth D'Angelo has worked in IT for more than 20 years, and it shows. She's a senior IT specialist at UW-Madison's Division of Information Technology. Thank her, as always. And again, the second Monday of every month, we set aside for tech questions that you may have, and we're guessing next month you'll have some more. Coming up next, we take a look at what it will take to change careers, get a better work-life balance, and make a better living. That's when we continue. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Larry Mueller today, and you're listening to The Larry Mueller Show. What would it take to change careers where you are today? Have you considered it? Most of us have, and most of us have also considered it terrifying. So how would you navigate your way from where you are today to someplace better when it comes to making a living? I'm Lee Rayburn in for Larry Mueller today, and this is The Larry Mueller Show. Our guest is Lanice Runnels. She's a workforce director in Waukesha, Ozaukee, and Washington counties for the Wisconsin Department of Workforce Development. And if you've successfully changed careers before, we'd love to hear what it took and how you did it. And if you're considering it and have questions, well, ask our expert, Lanice Reynolds. Join our conversation at any time. Give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or send us an email to talk@wpr.org. And Lanice, welcome to The Larry Mueller Show.
Hi, welcome, welcome. Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here today.
And we're excited to have you because I don't know of anybody that hasn't at least considered, well, maybe there is a better place for me. Maybe there's a better fit. Maybe there's better money, better work-life balance, more happiness. But when you start thinking about it, it seems rather challenging to say the least. So if I were to consider changing careers, Lanice, where would I even begin?
Oh, thank you for that question. That is a powerful, powerful question because making a career change, it's a powerful step towards shaping the future that you want. So what I would do is I would start with reflecting with what truly matters to you. So look at your strengths, your interests, your values, your long-term goals. Also, I would ask myself a few questions. So if listeners are listening, write this down. Ask yourself what energizes you. Ask yourself, what skills do you really enjoy using? Also, look at what do people constantly tell you you're good at, or what do people constantly ask you to do? This self-reflection, that can be your roadmap. Once you have taken this time to, like, reflect, start exploring career options. Of course, I'm going to talk a lot about Job Center of Wisconsin, which is our exchange system that we use to post our jobs, and a whole bunch of other resources, right? Mm-hmm. So you can go to the Job Center of Wisconsin, and we have career exploration tools there. If you go there, there's something called Plan a Career. And when you click on that, there's information where you can explore different occupations, pathways, wages, training options, and so much more. This is a great, great place to start if you want to see what's available and discover what aligns with your goal. Also, I want to share that if you go to Job Center Wisconsin, you can also connect to Wisconomy, which is another space right on that website. And there you can see what careers are currently in high demand, what industries are growing, and then you can pair your passion with the data. Ooh. And that will help you make a confident decision because now you're not just, oh, I'm good at this, but is there jobs in that? What will align?
So the website for the Job Center of Wisconsin through the Wisconsin Department of Workforce Development is jobcenterofwisconsin.com. Pretty simple. Jobcenterofwisconsin.com. But we also have a link to it on our website. So if you need it later, you'll find it at wpr.org/Larry. And Lanice, you say three questions you need to answer for yourself. What energizes you? What skills you enjoy? And what you're good at? And I'll just use me as an example. Well, I'm good at talking. I've got people skills, but after that, I'm not sure about what else my skill set would be. If I think about what people tell me I'm good at, yeah, I've got people skills. I'm good at talking, but where do I turn when, you know, I've talked for 20 years on the radio, but wouldn't know where else to go where my talking might be of value?
Yeah, that is great. So sometimes, people get stuck and they're like, this is what I'm good at and that's all I know. That's why we would use our career tools. So you can also use Skill Explorer, My Future, and all of this you can, again, I'm rattling this off, but you can find this on Job Center Wisconsin. In there, they are going to prompt you with some questions, right? They're going to ask you some things that you've done, and then based on that, they will output job titles that you could do. Now, of course, I tried this out myself because I can't just share a product and not have used it myself. And
sure.
So when I tried it out, it suggested like a funeral home director, just stuff that I would never think about because what it is doing is it's showing you your transferable skills, right? And so we have a lot of transferable skills. You have leadership, you have organization, you have all these different things. And so those are good skills that is going to transfer to your next step of the journey. And sometimes, again, that's why we use these tools. That's why we stop in the job center to talk to someone else, because they can pull those things out of us. They can ask us those questions. We can use these tools, and then they can connect us to other possibilities that you may not even considered or understood that, wow, I didn't know that I had that skill set, and maybe all it will take is additional trainings or some upskilling, but you would fit perfectly in that role. So again, it's really about being taking the courage to speak about it, think about it, and to move forward, because that takes a lot of courage. And we have to remember that this is a process, right? It's not going to happen overnight. But if you're willing to do the work, you don't have to do it alone. That's what we're here for.
You don't have to do it alone. Lynice Reynolds, our guest, Workforce Director with the State Department of Workforce Development. And if you've got questions about careers, give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. Work-life balance or just basic happiness, give us an email, talk@WPR.org. So, Lynice, I am over 50 now, and I wonder, is there an age where it is too late to change careers, or how do I figure out whether or not it's worth taking that risk so late in my work life?
It's never too late.
Never.
That's something that we hear a lot, and we're actually seeing a lot of mature workers or older workers come into our job centers or meet us at one of the access points or the libraries, and we're all around, right? And so you're never too old to start over. You have the experience, right? You have experience, you have wisdom, you have knowledge. The most important thing that employers are looking for is flexibility. Are you willing to be flexible? Are you willing to adapt? Are you willing to learn a new skill, right? So you have all of this knowledge and this experience. Now let's couple this with maybe your strongest point isn't technology. So how can we couple that with that and use that and really, really push forward? So there is no age limit on growth. If you have a growth mindset and you're willing to do it, you have something to add to the workforce. So I encourage people, don't allow your fear to stop you from moving forward, right? Your fear can fuel your purpose, right? And sometimes what happens is our identity is all caught up in the roles and the titles that we have.
Yes.
But guess what? Whether you have that current title or not, those skills and those experiences are still with you. You still harbor all of that. That's your inherited skill, and it's valuable. And someone needs it. There are employers looking for that. We have over 57,000 jobs posted right now on Job Center Wisconsin.
What was that number? Wait. Lynice, you said 57,000 jobs?
Yes. Yes. And so there are opportunities, and this is across the state of Wisconsin, right?
Yeah.
And so there are opportunities for you. There is someone that is looking for your wisdom, your knowledge, your mentorship, right?
Oh.
So don't look at age as a disadvantage, but look at it as an opportunity to give back and to still have meaningful, purposeful conversation and contribution to the community.
But flexibility is key here. I did not think of, you know, whether or not I'm willing to or flexible enough to adapt and learn. But you say that that is what employers are looking for.
Yes.
So are those 57,000 jobs, are they state jobs or jobs in the private sector? Are they across the board?
It's across the board, yes.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, people who are registered and vetted through our system, they're posting jobs. They're coming here. They're looking to post and looking for those connections. So
Job Center of Wisconsin.com. Thank you, Lynice. And let's go to David in New Richmond. David, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Say, Lee, you'd mentioned your age, and it almost made me laugh. A friend of mine just passed away. He was 76. Just a few years ago, after retirement, he thought he wanted to be more involved, get some things done. And he saw an ad for a company that had looking for a salesman with the gift of gab. And they basically taught him how to use a tool to measure roofs. And he was very successful selling roofs around the western Wisconsin area.
And when did he make that career change? After retirement?
When he was 72.
Wow. Never too late.
Never.
I love that story, David. Thank you. So I've got a ways to go to get there from here. So it is some perspective worth having, David, and I appreciate mm-hmm. that. So and what about...
And so I just want to say those are the kind of stories that we need to hear.
Yeah.
People need to hear and know that someone else did it, right? And so you're not alone. Even in that sense, there are other people who are in your age range, and guess what? They are looking and they are successful with it.
Well, we got a great question here from Dot in Manitowoc, so let's go there next. Dot, good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon. In the job interview, I would tell the potential employer, I would say, I am going to be on time. I'm not on drugs, and I'm not going to steal from you. That should put you on the top of the list for the job.
Dot, I appreciate that, but my concern was if I bring that up unsolicited, that they would be like, well, why is he bringing that up unsolicited? Why is he telling us he's not on drugs? We pretty much figured that already, or assumed as much. Lenise, when you enter that job interview, I can think of a few things less. It is like a gauntlet that you are going through where you are being, you're being tested about who you are and why you are who you are. And when you enter that interview room, how can you find the edge or confidence to be able to express yourself in a way that shows them that you are flexible enough and willing enough to become a part of that team?
Oh, yes. Interviewing is so important. And what I want to say to the comment that was made is it is great to share that you're going to be on time and things of that nature. But anything that may have a negative feel to it, like I won't do drugs, they do drug testing and all that. So that's not something you have to mention. I think that it's important to just to share, you know, what you bring, what you provide. So your interview was the key. And obviously there was something on your interview that drawed them in to make them want to have that conversation with you. And a lot of times we're nervous in that. But we have to remember this is not an interrogation. This is a dialogue. This is a conversation. So we have to go in that mindset that this is not just about if they want me. This is also about am I a good fit for them? And so I think just that shift in that mindset will help set a good tone and pace that this is a dialogue for both of us to see how this will fit, how we will work together. But there's a trick that I use that I like to share too with everyone when interviewing. Remember these three things: head, heart, and feet. I'll say it again: head, heart, and feet. Yes.
The head and the heart, Lenise, I can kind of understand, but walk us through that and get to the feet, which I do not.
Okay, so head. We have to think about facts and data. So we have to get to their head, right? Mm-hmm. And so there's some people who are very like, what is the data? What are you saying? You're saying, oh, I manage files, but give me more data to that, you know? So research the company, prepare example answers, right? Mm-hmm. So we know typical questions that they may ask, prepare some answers and make sure you have the details with that. And so we like to use the STAR method, which is share the situation, the task, the action, and the results, right? And then know your own data. Be ready to speak to your qualifications, skills, certifications, and achievements. So that's the head. The head is get the facts and the data about the company and about you. Next, the heart. We want to make an emotional connection during this interview, right? Mm. It's not just about, yes, I can do it, but it's also about a culture fit and all that other stuff. So show that you are genuinely concerned and you're genuinely interested and care about the opportunity and the mission, right? Mm. Be authentic. Connect on values. Explain not just why you can do it, but why this role matters, right? Listen and engage. Again, this is a conversation. You're building a real human connection with the interview. Let your personality show. So that's the heart. And finally, the feet is we got to take action, right? Your feet help you move. So we have to do something. We can't just think about it, right? So practice. Practice what you want to say. Practice those answers that you're going to give with a friend in a car or whatever. You also, again, I'm going to keep promoting the Job Center Wisconsin. If you go on the Job Center Wisconsin, there is a link that shows our location so you can meet us there. You can do mock interviews with us. That way you can get some feedback and things of that nature. And also show with energy. Send a thank you letter. Remember, head, heart, and feet. Bring the facts, make a connection, and take actions. When these three come together, I think that helps you to do the interview well.
Lynice Runnels, our guest, Workforce Director in Waukesha, Ozaukee, and Washington Counties for the State Department of Workforce Development. And if you've got a story about changing careers or about questions about what it would take, Lynice has some answers for you, and you can join our conversation by calling 1-800-642-1234 or email us talk@WPR.org. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Larry today, and you're listening to The Larry Mueller Show. I'm Lee Rayburn, in for Larry Mueller today on The Larry Mueller Show. But if you're looking to listen to a little bit of Larry, go no further than WPR.org/Larry. Well, you'll find an archive of all of our recordings, all of our broadcasts from The Larry Mueller Show. Pick one you like and take a listen anytime online at WPR.org/Larry. Right now, we're talking to Lynice Runnels, a workforce director in our State Department of Workforce Development, about what it would take to change careers, how we can find a better work-life balance, and find a better living. And if you've got questions, 1-800-642-1234 or email talk@WPR.org. And Lynice, Jeff emailed us. He has a Bachelor of Arts in Political Science, and that led ultimately to a law degree. And he worked in banks and real estate. But what he really found was he liked working with kids. So he retrained as a teacher, which eventually led to a community center program director, 10 years in all. He says, be flexible, retrain if needed, pursue your passion, and never give up. When it comes, flexible, retrain, pursue your passion, never give up, got all of that except for, where would I go to retrain, Lynice?
Oh, that is a great, great question. So, again, I know you guys are going to get tired of me saying this, but
JobCenterWisconsin.com.
This is your hub, okay? Think of us as your emergency response team, okay? So we are there. We help people with this all the time. But literally, JobCenterWisconsin is the great place to go. Why? Because then you can look up what training options you have. So it depends on if you're currently laid off. It depends on different situations, but we can connect you to the WIOA program, which is a short-term training program. There's apprenticeship. Depending if you're eligible for DVR, there's opportunities that are there for you to reconnect, right? And so there is something there. But the first thing you have to do is be willing to connect, be willing to share, be willing to open up. That way you can see what pathways are available. You can see and make very intentional decisions about what will be right for you. Is it going back to school? Is it picking up a certificate? What will that look like going in person, virtually? So there's so many different options and there's so many different programs that are available that we definitely want to make sure that you're connected to. And again, I will say this over and over again, you don't have to do it alone.
Yeah.
We are here. This is what we do. This is what we specialize in. And we literally, the people who work here have the passion, right? The passion and the knowledge. And if they don't know, I'm telling you, they are going to research, they are going to find, they are going to get that information to you so that you are able to get that help. Also, if you're not able to stop in, there is virtual options where you can connect with us as well. So we have that layout for you, because connecting to you and making those right connections, they're crucial to what we do, and we want to do that.
Lynice, when you were talking about how to prepare for a job interview and the three basics of head, heart, and feet, you mentioned the STAR method, and I think it's an acronym for something, but I didn't quite catch it, and I want to know what the STAR method is in case I need to use it. Lynice?
Yes. I'm sorry. Here I go. I had it on mute. But the STAR method, that stands for situation, task, action, and result. So you use that when they're asking you a question. Say they're asking you a question about your leadership, or they're asking you a question about your technology skills. You don't want to just say, I led a team, right? You want to say, well, what was the situation in which you led a team? What was that task that you did? And what was the action? And what was the positive result of that? So you would do that with every question that they kind of ask. So you can prepare ahead, especially if you know, you obviously will know the type of jobs that you're applying for. And if you've been on a few interviews, some of the questions are similar, right?
Yep.
So you can prepare for that. And another way to prepare that we encourage people is look at the job announcement. The job announcement is basically asking you a question, right? They're saying what they're looking for. They might say reliability, dependability. We need someone with computer skills, things of that nature. So you will go through that, look at what they're looking for, and then you practice, okay, how am I reliable? Well, at my last job, I had a perfect attendance record, worked there for over 3 years, right? Or never had issues. So for each thing that they're asking, how would you answer that? And prepare with that by doing the STAR method, situation, task, action, and result. And that will help you, you know, to be able to answer those questions in more detail so the employer can get a clearer picture, because all they have is the paper and then they have what you're saying. So it's so important that we communicate in a way that they can see our added value, that no, I don't just do the task, I excel in it.
I love that. The STAR method: situation, task, action, and result. An opportunity for you to present yourself fully in a job interview. But what about when it comes to resumes, Lanice? And I, the way I understand it now is that artificial intelligence may be entering into the resume game in a way that is not just writing, helping to write resumes, but also helping to read resumes as well. So what does that mean for job seekers who are out there trying to find their next gig?
Yes, that's a great question, because we get them, you know, we get a lot of people who come into our centers or meet us out at the libraries and other places, and they need help with their resumes. Some people will come in and say, I've applied to all these places and no one is calling us back, calling me back. So the first step, if you're not getting any callbacks and you know that you are spending a lot of time applying, the first thing we would say, well, let's take a look at your resume, right? And so are you submitting the exact same resume for every single job, or are you tailoring that resume for that job that you're applying for? Sometimes that just means adjusting some of the skill set to make sure that, okay, I didn't communicate that and I did do that and this job is asking about that. I want to make sure that I communicate that on the resume, because you have to remember the resume is what gets you in the door, and then you have time to explain in more details at the interview. But if you're not getting in the door, you know, we have to look at that resume. So what our team will do is they will spend time to go over your resume, give you some options, work with you, talk through that, and make sure that your resume is your voice. And so when you talk about AI, AI is a great tool. Yes, a lot of people are using it. I don't discourage the use of AI, but I also encourage people to understand that it's a tool. It's not the answer. You are the pilot. It's just the co-pilot. And some people are flipping that around. Mm-hmm. And so when you go in and you're filling this out, and if someone were to ask you about it, you wouldn't even be able to explain it, because it's not your word. It's not your voice. It's not uniquely you. Mm. So use AI as a tool. It'll help you generate ideas. It'll help you come up with what else you might could say about that. But it's a rough draft. You really need to spend time making sure that your unique experience, that's going to make your resume stand out. And only you can add that. AI can't add that. AI is not you. AI is not your human experience. And so that's what we need to see and feel, even in a resume.
When you look at those job descriptions before you apply, how can you use those job descriptions to better create a resume that'll get you through to that first round of interviews, Lanice?
So I'll give you a quick example. Say if the job description says that they need someone who knows how to organize or manage customers' information, right? So a basic resume would just say, I manage customer files. But what you want to do, again, is put some more information into that. So instead of just saying you managed customer files, you would say something like, I streamlined 500-plus customer files, which reduced processing by 20%. So you give them a little bit more than just the task, okay? You have to give them, even in the resume, a short, now it's not long, a short result to that. That's going to make them see you and say, oh, okay, that's going to make your resume stand out from the next person, and you both could, especially if you're looking at someone with similar experience, similar skills, who is sharing with me a little bit more, oh, I need someone who can cut our time by 20%. How much money could we save then? Or what else could we be focusing our energy on if we could do that?
How dangerous is it to stretch the truth, whether it be in a resume or a interview, about your abilities?
I encourage people to
not do that.
But it could get you the job.
Because you're stretching the truth to get in a position, and you're not being truthful, you're not being honest, so then you will be expected to do that which you promised. And so now you are not trustworthy. If I can't trust you in the front end, how am I going to trust you in the end? Even if you say they don't let you go for that, that can impact their perception of you, right? Well, you said that you knew how to do this, this, and that, and now we see that you don't. Yes, you're a great worker and everything, but can I trust you now? So it's really important. And then if you do that, then you are missing out on the great things that you can do. So be honest. I don't know how to do that, but I'm willing to learn. I learned A, B, and C that I didn't know before. I'm willing to learn that. But let's focus on what you can do, and let's highlight that, because you don't want to get in a role and then be deemed as someone who was not honest.
What happens when somebody is laid off and loses their job? And what's the first step they should take, and how should they move forward once they find themselves without employment?
Losing a job, first of all, I just want to honor the fact that that is a moment of grief, right? Yeah. So it's like a setback, and you want to allow yourself time to grieve. So the first thing I would do is take a deep breath. Understand, you know what? I lost a job, you know, and especially, again, our job is a lot of time attached to our identity. But honor the mourning. Grief isn't just about death, but it's also about any significant loss. Losing a job can mean losing your identity, your daily routine, the community. You build a community with people, your sense of security, and it happens all at once. So it's okay to mourn. That is normal. That happens. But we want to transition from mourning to growth, right? Because that's where we have to start taking the steps. And it doesn't mean that what you lost didn't matter. Because it does. It means that you're choosing to let your experience reshape you rather than define you. So start with small things. What can you take control over, right? I can update my resume right away. Mm-hmm. So I can do that. I can call and connect with and network with family and friends. I can do that. But once you do that, we definitely want to encourage you to come to the Job Center, Wisconsin. Come to the Job Center, right? Or you can go online, Job Center, Wisconsin. But we want to make sure that you're doing all the different steps to apply for unemployment to see if you're eligible. And you'll be surprised. I get people who say they don't want to apply for unemployment because they don't want to take a handout. This is not a handout. This is a benefit that can help you while you are transitioning, right? So you want to come in. You want to do that. You want to talk before when you lose your job too, you want to find out from your employer, is there severance? Is there unused leave time? Mm-hmm. Is there continuation with health care? There's some things that you may want to do. And again, coming in and talking with someone, especially when we're grieving, because let's remember, we're grieving this. Sometimes we don't think about all the stuff we need to do. And that's why it's good to have another perspective and someone that you can trust and talk to. And someone that deals with this, like we deal with this every day. So someone you can talk to about the process and things that you can do. But you definitely want to register on Job Center Wisconsin. You want to apply for unemployment. You also may want to get food share and maybe see if there's some other benefits, the training that we talked about that you could take advantage of at that time. And again, this is not a handout. This is a hand up. These were built for safety nets for situations such as this.
I'm so glad you mentioned the grieving process that comes with losing a job. But there's also the feeling of rejection that comes with applying for jobs. Before I was hired by Wisconsin Public Radio, that was a process of applying at 100 different radio stations all across the country just in hopes I could find one. And fortunately for me, one was right here in my home state. So I feel like I got lucky there. But I also remember the feeling of rejection after rejection after rejection, and there is an emotional component to this, Lanice, and it seems like you have the tools to help us deal with it.
Definitely, definitely. There is very, very much. You deal with, and I'm glad you brought that up, rejection. That is a real feeling. And we have to remember that, try not to take it personal. They don't know you, right? So they're not really rejecting you. They're hiring who they feel is best for that role in that position. And just because they didn't pick you doesn't equal your value or your worth. And so it's so important that we continue, because this can become an emotional toll, is that we have to continue a routine. What I see sometimes is when people lose a job, we can become in a desperate mode, right? Mm-hmm. And then we spend all this time looking for a job, calling, outreaching. We're getting rejections. No one's calling us back. No one's reaching out. And then you can get in this cycle. We have to have a routine, because routine provides stability. So just like when you go to work, you have set hours when you're looking for employment. You set hours. You take breaks. Guess what? You still do your social outings, right? You might have to limit that once you look at your budget, but you still live life, right? You still live your life, and that will help you to move forward. Lean on your community. A lot of times what happens is people will isolate because, again, our identity is attached to this. Who am I now? No one wants me. And then we will come up with reasons in our own head. Why? Well, maybe because I'm overqualified. Maybe because I'm my age. Different reasons why that we're not getting called back, when a lot of times it's just shifting our perspective, getting that help within the community. That's why you don't isolate. Talk to your family, your friends. And it's funny. A lot of us, we have our family, right? And we kind of know what they do. But do you know all they do? Do you know the networks they're connected to? Someone in my own family was looking for a job, and she was like, oh, I reached out to my cousin, and I asked her about where she works and who is a manager, and come to find out the lady was a manager and all this. So she didn't even know this, and she ended up getting a part-time job with them, right? And so sometimes we don't even know within our own families, within our own networks and things of that nature, who does what. So don't be ashamed. This is nothing to be ashamed of. This is a shift, right? And so, you know that old saying, closed mouths don't get fed. Well, proudly say I am. You might not be the current director of communication, but I am a communicator. You still have the skills. You just don't have the title with that company. So remember that as you move forward, and celebrate your wins along the way. You're not trying to get through this transition. You're building towards it. You're moving forward.
Lanice Reynolds, our guest, workforce director in Waukesha, Ozaukee, and Washington counties for our State Department of Workforce Development. And if you've got career questions, you can join us at 1-800-642-1234. If you've got stories about changing careers midstream, also invite you to join us, 1-800-642-1234, or you can always send us an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Larry today, and you're listening to The Larry Mueller Show. Larry Mueller is back with you live tomorrow from 11 to 1, and you'll be joined by the editor of Our Wisconsin Magazine, Mike Bino, with their December-January issue, Hot Off the Presses. Don't miss that. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Larry today, and our guest is Lanice Reynolds. She is a workforce director for our State Department of Workforce Development. And we're talking about what it would take to change careers, how we can find a better work-life balance or improve our work life. And if you can join us at 1-800-642-1234 or email talk@wpr.org. And here's a logistics question, Lanice, that I've heard, you know, both ways. Amy from Milwaukee emailed us and wants to know whether or not a resume needs to be kept to one page, or can it be more than one?
That we get asked that all the time. Yeah. And so the truth of the matter is, we encourage one page, but if it's two pages and it's relevant information and it applies to the job, you can definitely have a two-page resume. The most important thing to do is look at that job description and how does your resume line up to what they're looking for, right? And sometimes we say it's so important. Placement, location is important. So if you're applying for a job and say that the education is relevant because you got a certificate in that and things of that nature, and but maybe your work experience is kind of farther down, then you may want to move your your schooling to the top, so they see that right away. So everything is relevant to the job that you're applying for. But we definitely encourage the most important thing, because you have to remember sometimes that the tracking system, the automated tracking system, is reading these resumes, and, or if it's a human going through the resumes. If it's too long and it's too much information, are you grasping their attention? So you have about 10 to 15 minutes, right? I mean, 10 to 15 seconds, I'm sorry, for them to think about that. If you were looking at your resume in 10 to 15 seconds, is what you're saying standing out to what they're looking for on that job description?
10 to 15 seconds. Would your resume jump out in that amount of time? And if not, what can you do to make it different? That's a great question, Lanise. And again, the Job Center Wisconsin has resume help available, as well as all the job center locations around the state.
That is correct. Again, we don't want you to do this alone.
Yeah.
Look at us as your valuable partner. We want to be partners with you on your job search. We want to help you, because again, you want to get a different perspective. You don't want to get stuck, and you want to know what's available, what's out there. So it's a good opportunity to connect with someone, and also then to find out what career fairs are going on, job fairs, employers that are going to be on site, so you can make those meaningful connections with employers as well. And so connecting with us, just getting on our – we have an email list that you can get on, email blast list once you register, where you can just stay up to date with stuff in your area of what's going on. But also, you know, AI, text messages, all this stuff, all those tools are great. They're tools. But we cannot forget the human connection, right? So it's something about connecting and talking with someone about what's going on and getting some advice and getting some direction as well. So use the other tools, but also use the tools of humans. Connect, talk, release.
Connect, talk, release. We heard from David in New Richmond earlier, who talked about the 72-year-old friend who changed careers, or his friend who changed careers at the age of 72. David also says there's a lot of opportunities out there for representing products from other companies, working from home, a way you can make your own business or develop your own business. And David says he wishes there would be more encouragement for people to be self-employed. Well, talk about a scary landscape just looking for a job. The landscape of starting your own business, Lanise, I'd say that's more daunting, but also potentially more rewarding.
I would agree with that. There are definitely opportunities for that. And actually, DWD, we just partnered with small business clinics, and they just have one in Waukesha area, but they've been going around the state, and they're going to be the next location is going to be in Fond du Lac at the beginning of the year. And so this is a great opportunity for those people who want to start their own business, want to know what resources are out there, what's available to them, because now you would be an employer, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so you want to know, how do you get that started? If I need help, what do I need to do? So again, connecting to the Job Center Wisconsin, once you're on that, you will get the email blast of different people we partner with, such as the small business clinics. And again, they are sharing that kind of information, because that is a real option for some people.
Sure. And so
to start their own business. And it can be scary if you don't have those right connections.
And David, I'm glad you followed up with us. Thank you for that. And on the flip side of that, there's the idea of maybe I want a little part-time work, or maybe a side hustle's right for me. How do I find the right one, or the one that's fulfilling, that would be worth my time on the side, Lanise?
So a lot of things we have to do is we have to try, right? And so some things we don't know if we'll like or if we don't. And so even during your transition, if while you're looking for employment, don't be afraid to volunteer, right? Try some new things. See what you like. See what you might feel called to, because you may find something new just by doing that. But of course, you can use our website, and you can select, there's drop down boxes where you can select if you want full time, part time, things of that nature. So you can look that way to see as well if there's some part-time opportunities that are posted. But definitely, I would say volunteer. That is another option to kind of see, do I like this? Is this something that I want to spend my time in? And you may, and again, this goes to networking. You may even find your next job through volunteering.
Putting yourself out there and making yourself available, being open and being flexible, these all sound like qualities you're going to have when it comes to switching careers, finding better employment, becoming self-employed, or just grabbing a side hustle, Denise. I got a call here from Bill in La Crosse. He couldn't stay with us, but he wants to point out that working for a small business or company can be very different from working for a larger company. And could you address some of those differences?
Oh yes, it's different just because the amount of staffing that they have, and maybe the amount of resources and access that they have. So that can definitely have a different feel with it. A lot of times you have to have more flexibility and sometimes more grace, right? When you're working with a startup company or a smaller company, maybe some of the resources that a larger company will typically have, a smaller company might not have. But then on the other side, a smaller company, definitely, you might have different things such as a more connection, right? Because you see the CEO, you talk to the CEO, there may be a total different type of feel. And so I think it's really finding what's right for you, and what's right for you today might be different 5-10 years down the road. So that's why I say always be open to flexibility, be open to adapting and seeing what is right for you, because something can change based on your health condition. Something can change based on your family situation. Some things can change financially. You might be okay, but you just want to do something that's impactful and meaningful. So maybe you would connect to a smaller or startup business. So there's all different types of reasons, but that's why we have to take the time to self-reflect, see where we're at, see what will work for us financially, what will work for us, our family dynamics, what will work for you. And then, again, this is not just a decision on people that you're applying to if they will hire you. It's a decision. I'm looking at what will be a good fit, and those are the places that I'm applying to from the beginning.
Denise, you have handled all of our questions today, and this one might be a little astray, so I understand but I am curious about how you express confidence when you're going into an interview and you're nervous, when you're entering a new job and you don't know whether or not you're going to be a good fit. How do you present yourself with some semblance of confidence, even though on the inside you may just feel like jelly?
That's a good one. And the truth is, everyone has felt nervous at some point, even if it's not during an interview. There's been some point in our life that we have felt nervous, right? The people who seem confident, they have learned to just channel that nervous energy into enthusiasm, right? Everyone feels nervous, but it shows that you really care. True confidence isn't about the absence of fear. It's the willing to move forward despite the fear, right? So we have to reframe our mindset. Nervous equals excitement, because our body reacts the same thing. So let me not think, when we're nervous, we think we're going to mess up. Uh-huh. Something bad is going to happen.
Oh, yeah.
What if they don't like me? What if? When we're excited, we can't wait. We want to do it. So change your mind frame from I'm nervous to I'm excited because I'm interested in this job, because I know that I have the skill set. So when you're feeling nervous, tell yourself, no, I'm not nervous. I'm excited. And what does that mean? How am I going to show up? So that's one thing. Remember your worth. And I said this before. This job does not hold your future in their hand. This is a conversation. You both make that decision, right? Is this a journey we both want to take together? So whether they choose you or not, you still have control. You still have power. So don't put all the work in one job. And so, again, practicing and things of that nature, that will help you feel more confident too. But remember your worth, and remember, again, what? You are not alone. We are here. We will help you. We want to help you. Visit us at centerofwisconsin.com.
Kind of a revelation to me that the feeling of enthusiasm and nervousness are the same. It's just the different way we process them in our bodies or in our heads. And if we were to take that and change the thought process to, boy, I'm feeling nervous, to, boy, I'm feeling enthusiastic, it may change our outcomes. I really appreciate that. Where did you learn all this? Where did you get your job training from? I mean, you've got this backwards and forwards, and I couldn't throw you a curveball if I tried here, Lanice. So what's your background?
Well, I think it's because I've been with in this position 17 plus years. So
wow.
I've been here a while, and I'm still excited. I still love what I do. I still love the fact that we help to connect people. I still love the fact that we can meet someone literally in the biggest moment of their life, and then we can provide them hope. We can let them know that they can do it. We can provide them that there's light at the end of the tunnel. So just having conversations and honestly hearing results, seeing people's life change. And it's just, you know, you take those experiences and you have them with you, you carry them with you. And it's such an honor to be able to serve people and to be able to help people and to be able to remind them of their work, that they're not just their career, they're more than that. And that it's a gift to be able to be at any company, right? And so just reminding people of that, I think that has helped me, that has fueled me, that continues to fuel me. And I literally enjoy what I do. I literally just love helping people.
And it shows. But what would you say has changed the most in your role with the Department of Workforce Development over those 17 years, Lanice?
I would say recently with just the change in how we service people, and it's been a good change. At first, when it first happened, and what I'm talking about is going like to remote and hybrid models, because everything was all in person. Everything was in person. So at first, it's kind of scary. How are we going to serve the people this way? Is this going to work? Are we still going to have the impact? But what we found, and what I personally found, is that we can have a huger impact. Now, people can reach us no matter where they're at. We can serve people across. I can be in Milwaukee and help somebody in Superior virtually, right? Because I'm sharing those skills. And so we're not just dependent on staff in one area, right? We are able to spread the wealth, spread the knowledge. We are able to meet people where they're at with us going to the libraries now and going to other outreach sites. It's just been such a beautiful shift that I think was needed. And also it helps people to not have any barriers to get to us. You know, sometimes you're trying, when you lose your job, especially, you're trying to see, how can I save on my finances?
Yeah.
So if I can meet you virtually, let me do that, because I still want the service, but I'm being very conscious of my finances. So I just think that the shift has been great. That's one of the biggest shifts that I've seen, and I think that it has definitely been beneficial.
With the 1 minute that we have left, Lanice, if you could leave our listeners with one message about navigating their careers and their lives in this season, what would it be?
I would just say that you have more power than you think. Whenever you're facing a layoff or you're thinking about considering a change or you feel stuck, that you're not alone. The one moment doesn't define your future. You don't have to see the whole staircase just to take one step forward. And finally, your resume is not your most valuable asset. It's your willing to move forward. Because if you're willing to move forward, we can help you with your resume. If you're willing to move forward, we can help you with your interview. But you have to be willing to move forward and partner with us. And together, we can move forward on your journey.
JobCenterWisconsin.com. And real quick, Patrick emailed us to echo what you were saying about channeling the nerves to enthusiasm and mentioned this quote, "Courage is the strength to act wisely when you are afraid." Might have even gotten the quote from a different show right here on NPR. Patrick says thank you, and we thank you as well. Lanice Reynolds, thank you so much for your information today, and it was a pleasure to have you here.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Lanice Reynolds is a workforce director in Waukesha, Ozaukee, and Washington counties for the Wisconsin Department of Workforce Development. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Larry Mueller today, and Larry will be back live tomorrow with the editor of Our Wisconsin magazine and their new issue, Hot Off the Presses. Want to thank our team today, Clara Neipert, Joel Patnaud, Jeff Robbins, Jill Nadeau, and of course, Larry Mueller for letting me sit in. It's always a pleasure, and thank you so much. Stay tuned. Lots more in store here on WPR News.